Blog Talk Radio.
Radio one-on-one, of course, partnered with partnersincrimetours.net. Today we have author Catherine Hall Page going to be talking about her latest book, The Body in the Wardrobe. It is the next in her Faith Fairchild series, so make sure that you check this out, because she has a lot of books in this series, and the next one is The Body in the Wardrobe. Poor Faith keeps finding them in different places. So we're curious to see how this one turns out. We also want to let you know that all the shows this year are brought to you by Kensington Books. So visit kensingtonbooks.com. That includes Daniel Palmer, Kevin O'Brien, Lisa Jackson, Mary Burton, and many more in their stable of authors. So make sure you check them out. We are going to jump now right into our guest. Again, her name is Catherine Hall Page. You can find her if you go to catherine-hall-page.com. .org for more information. She's an Agatha Award-winning mystery novelist. So, Catherine, thanks so much for coming on. How are you doing?
I'm fine, John. It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me. I don't think the listeners could hear the music that was in the background while I was being muted, but I kind of had the feeling, very Wagnerian, that, you know, fire and brimstone stuff should be going on all over. A very dramatic entry.
Well, I like to wake them up.
Just in case they get on,
and then they get that thing, and it's like, okay, here we go, now we're going. And now, you know, if they listen to it when they're walking on their treadmill or in their car or what, it's like, boom, now we're ready to go.
Yeah,
so,
it is genius, brilliant. Anyway, let's get into
the series here. So the next book, The Body in the Wardrobe, it came out on April the 26th, so it's out now for people if they want to go check it out. So why don't you give us a little bit about what you got going on here with your next Faith Fairchild mystery series?
Okay. Well, first of all, just to backtrack a minute, a little over 25 years ago, my husband took a sabbatical, and I was living in France with a small child, and they had really excellent daycare, and I had been in education. I've been a teacher and administrator, and suddenly I had a year where I wasn't working for the first time in my adult life, and I had always had this book in my head, a mystery. I read everything, but I would like kind of was, and I had this character, Faith Fairchild. So I wrote The Body in the Belfry all those years ago, and 25 years ago exactly at the Malice Domestic Convention, it won Best First Mystery. And I had thought I was just writing a standalone, and, you know, I just sent it off to an agent. I saw a little ad in a professional journal, you know, intending to go back into schools and all of that. Well, the editor said, when can we expect the next in the series? And I thought, oh, all right, I guess maybe we'll go on for a little while. Well, now we're at The Body in the Wardrobe, and it's number 23 in the series. And Malice Domestic, I have just come back from D.C., where I amazingly to me received the Lifetime Achievement Award for all of these books in which my character, Faith Fairchild, who is living in New England but born and bred in Manhattan, she is a caterer. So there's lots of food in the mystery. I think sort of who done it and who ate it go together really well. So there's kind of food in them, and that was in the beginning. There were not, well, there had been Rex Stout, but not, and Virginia Rich, not a lot of kind of culinary mysteries. Now it's a big explosion. She's the daughter and granddaughter of clergy. She swears she doesn't want to be in that fishbowl existence, but she falls in love with this with this handsome, dashing New Englander who is in Manhattan. She's catering a reception. She doesn't realize he's just performed the ceremony. So the point of all this is that she leaves for this small town west of Boston. And in the first book, she's got a new baby, and she finds the still warm body of a parishioner in the town's old belfry. And then, so we're off and running from there. This town, is, I called it Aylford. There is no such place. It's a compilation of a lot of them. And then I alternate them with what I call the Someplace Else books to kind of to keep the series fresh. You can read each book as a standalone, but some people like to read them, you know, from the beginning. And her character, I think, has, you know, developed a lot. And this time we find her in Savannah, Georgia, which a place I fell in love with when I had a friend move there a couple of years ago. And, I mean, Savannah is just the perfect place to set a mystery, as if anyone has ever, if there's anyone left who hasn't read Midnight in the Garden of Evil or
right.
seen the movie. You know, I mean, Savannah is just a fantastic place. So in the last book, The Body and the Birches, Faith teams up with a young woman named Sophie Maxwell. And I kind of liked the pairing of the two of them because they both are outsiders. Like Faith, she never gets used to New England boiled dinners or the fact that New Englanders, you know, eat dinner at 5:30 or and what have you. You know, so, you know, she's got, brought that perspective. Sophie is also a northerner, and she's, in this book, has married the man she met in the last book and is living in Savannah, Georgia, very happily, but yet, you know, it's a whole new language, in a sense, you know, the, in terms of the mores, and she's got some interesting in-laws, and then, of course, very early on in the book, she opens up this wardrobe, kind of think of Lion, Witch in the Wardrobe, big armoire type thing, to hang up a skirt, and a very large, very dead body falls out with a kind of machete knife stuck in his back. So that's kind of what happens there. She races out, and when the police come and search the house from top to bottom, there's no body, and there's no way that body could have gotten out. She's been standing right in front of it. You know, it's walled in on the back. So, you know, what, you know, how did it disappear? And, of course, they all just think, well, you know, she's seen one of our ghosts. Savannah's called the Ghost City. Well, you know, they're kind of slightly envious even that she had this interesting experience. But, you know, she knows what she saw. And so eventually Faith has to come down from New England, and she and Sophie solve the mystery.
And now,
so that's it in a nutshell there.
And now when you're looking, I mean, 23 books into a series, I mean, that's a massive amount.
Yeah, I know, it's astonishing.
Data.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just a massive amount of data that you have there. I mean, lots of characters have come in and out, lots of settings, lots of different things have been. So let's just kind of start where, why, first of all, and let's just talk about the setting. How do you go about picking the setting, and why did you pick Savannah, Georgia for this one?
Well, I have never been able to write about a place where I actually have not been. Another segue, the best description of writing that I've ever come across is a line from Madeleine L'Engle writing about writing. She wrote A Wrinkle in Time, which is one of my favorite books, and she wrote that for her, writing was like taking dictation from her imagination. And that kind of sums it up for me. But my imagination, I can imagine characters, like, you know, plot, all sorts of other things. But in terms of place, I really have to, you know, Aylford is, as I said, a compilation of a lot of towns west of Boston, you know, that I know. I grew up in New Jersey, but I've been here all of my adult life. So you know, have to have immersed myself in a place. So when my friend moved there and I began going down, To escape winter and see Meg, I just became fascinated with it. And that's the same thing that happened with other places where I've set the books. I set The Body in the Fjord, big hint, it's set in Norway. My mother was Norwegian-American, so many, many, many trips to Norway. I set a book in France because, of course, you know, we had lived there, and we ended up going back and back. My husband was still working on the project. You know, so there's this that kind of sense that I have to be able to immerse myself in it. So that's how the places get chosen. I did set two books in the past. Publishers call them prequels. I'm not really sure that's a word. So I set one, you know, before Faith was married, before she had kids, as a young woman in New York in the sort of the 1980s. Faith has kind of hovered on one side or the other of 40 for many, many books because once I told Ruth Carolyn, my editor, you know, how are people going to believe she stumbles across bodies all the time? She said, it's fiction, Catherine. You can do whatever you want. So I've
right,
kept
look
her,
at Jessica Fletcher.
Her, exactly. She never, you know, she never changed a bit. I mean, even
right.
Angela Lansbury never looked any different. But, you know, so Faith, her kids have, you know, I got good advice from a man named Bill Deke, who was a wonderful authority on the mystery. And, you know, he said, okay, so she has a kid in the first book, which was against all the rules of mystery writing and the old Haycroft rules of what you're supposed to do and not do in mystery writing. But, I mean, it never occurred to me, you know, at that stage in life, you know, she'd have a kid. But it is awkward. You know, you can't just leave the child alone and go pursue a hot lead. But he said, keep the kids off stage. You know, if she has another one, you know, don't make them cute. So I know that's pretty much how it's been in all the books. But now they're teenagers, so they're sort of poking in a little bit more. In this book, the middle school daughter, Amy, is being bullied online, as is too often the case these days. So Faith is coping with that. But she does end up in Savannah with Sophie again and the two of them. I kind of liked having, you know, Sophie's in her late 20s. You know, she's just sort of starting out in this whole adventure of relationships. And Faith is, you know, as I say, a bit older.
Yeah.
I enjoyed writing about the two of them. So that's why I did it in this second book. I don't know if Sophie will come back again, but it just felt like I wasn't ready to leave the character of Sophie.
Mm-hmm.
Faith will always be with us for, I don't know how many more, but at least one more because I'm writing it. So.
Now, the one thing that you did mention was, yes, how can she keep finding bodies all the time?
Yeah.
And that's kind of a hard thing that you have to keep thinking about. So why you're thinking about, because you have to keep changing up the mysteries. I mean, even Agatha Christie really never wrote the same mystery twice.
No, you really have to. Yep.
So when you're sitting down writing, I mean, how many notes or post-its do you have sitting out? Because you have to kind of make sure that you probably have 50% of the readers who like to read and just read the book. And then you have the other 50% who like to read and try to solve the before it comes out. So when you're kind of leaving clues and dropping them, do you kind of have notes? Do you have these things?
Oh,
and then
yeah.
When you go back
oh,
and read,
absolutely.
Do you change and do all those kinds of stuff?
Oh, yeah. I'm not the kind of writer, I know fantastic writers, you know, who have no notion of who done it, who sit down every day, pound out a certain amount of words, get to the end of the book, send it to the editor, and that's that. That I am not, sadly, that kind of writer. But what I do is I start out with a pretty detailed synopsis. In the beginning books, it was really a long one. And I go over that with my editor. I've been lucky to have terrific editors. Nothing I write can't be made better. But, you know, and so now the synopses are much shorter, but essentially that's kind of the bones of the book, the skeleton of the book. And it'll change a lot as I write the book. But I'm still, you know, kind of wedded to the pen and pencil. I have these notebooks, the ones that come from France with the little graph paper, so it keeps my handwriting somewhat neat. And I make, I have a timeline so that Faith isn't doing something 1 week and then suddenly 2 days later, you know, it's an awkward reference and more time has passed and character descriptions. I keep track of the first and last line of every chapter so that it doesn't all start the same. And I have lists, you know, from other books of that I can go back to those notebooks. That they're invaluable. When I do, you do research. Like, it was a lot of fun to do research on the prequels because going back, the hot Christmas gift in 1989 was a portable phone, and it looks like Maxwell Smart's shoe phone. It's so big and clunky. You know, that was like a really expensive hot gift of that particular time. So research is a lot of fun, and that's all in the notebooks. And I have to keep track. The other thing with the series is I have to give information right off the bat to tell you the reader who Faith Fairchild is, but make it different in every book so that people who are reading the whole series don't say, oh, here it is again. Faith Fairchild grew up in Manhattan, da da da. And that's hard. That's a kind of a hard thing to do. But writing mystery fiction is very different from writing other kinds of fiction because, as you wisely point out, you've got to provide the fair clues. You've got to play fair with the reader for all those people who are trying to outwit you. You know, I have to describe the crime exactly like a newspaper reporter, but at the same time, I have to throw in the red herrings and divert you. But it has to be fair. I recently read a mystery. I was on a panel with someone, and I had to go back to the beginning of the book to find out who that person was who turned out to be the murderer, because it was so obscure. So, you know, I kind of felt a little miffed at that.
and I get, when I used to read Agatha Christie, I used to try to figure out who the murderer was, but then I decided, you know what, I'm just going to read just to enjoy the book on its own, and I found that a lot more entertaining than trying to outwit the author. But I know that with cozy mysteries, I mean, they're a huge genre. They're very, 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 very popular. Yeah. So I'm sure you have a lot of fans who like to write you and say, yes, you got me this time, or no,
absolutely.
I didn't understand.
Yeah,
and I'm sure you get a lot of those emails. Do you have any fun ones, any cool ones that you'd like to share, like just that come off the top of your head?
Oh, well, actually, it's in the old days when you could got snail mail. I love to hear from readers on Facebook or on the website or anything. One day I got this letter, and it was postmarked St. Paul, and it was from a pastor. The first line was that he was a pastor in St. Paul, and it went on and said that he and his wife had enjoyed the books, but that they had been noticing there was a disturbing tendency toward too much sex in the books, and that all the references to Tom, and Tom is the husband, and Faith going upstairs were really not necessary to the story and took away from it. And then he also had read The Body in the Vestibule, which was set in France, and he didn't really see why I needed to set a book in France, that, you know, why not pick a place like Norway or Germany or someplace that people would identify with more, and on like that. And I laughed, and I immediately picked up the phone because I assumed it was my cousin Liz, who lives in St. Paul. And I said, very funny, Lizzie, ha ha, you know. And she said, what are you talking about? And I, the letter. And she said, I didn't write you a letter. And I have really saved that one because it's hysterical. There is no graphic sex cozies or the traditional mystery. You know, you're not going to find Miss Marple in a ménage à trois. Oops, there I go using French again. But you're not going to find that in the traditional mystery. And so that's been one of my favorite really favorite letters. But what I like, you know, people will write, at the end of the book, you should be able to say, I had all the clues, I should have guessed who did it. But, of course, I hope they haven't. And it's only very rare that somebody will write to me and say, you know, that they were able to figure it out. Mostly people are surprised. So
right.
That's good. That's
right.
What you
mean. I mean, and I think that that's, I mean, when, let's just kind of get into, and we're just, because you have so many, but let's just get into the latest one, The Body in the Wardrobe.
Yeah.
You kind of have the main character set, but now you got to bring in a whole bunch of others. I mean, you have
the
murderer,
a ton
you
of
have
new
a bunch
ones,
of other suspects, everything
yep.
else. So when you're kind of creating, do you know off the bat who the killer is going to be, or do you kind of let all these suspects start talking, and then you're like saying, all right, you know what, it's going to be Bob, or it's going to be Sally, or and it's like halfway through that you figure it out?
Well, maybe that's why you just raised a good question for me. Maybe that's why people don't guess it, is because I know all the way through. So it's consistent. I don't, it's like when I sit down to write the book, I know who the killer is. So, you know, so I'm, again, giving these other people, in this book in particular, I think that there's a character whom people really should think it's a murderer, but then at the end of the book, and people have said, you know, oh yeah, that made more sense. Okay, so I think there is that whole. There's only been once when I wrote a book called The Body and the Kelp. That was very funny because in those days too, you kind of went cross country on these book tours and things. And when I was in other parts of the country, in the middle of the country, you know, the people didn't really know. Well, now everybody knows what kelp is because it's so good for you. But in those days, it was like what is this kelp? What, you know?
Yeah.
In that book, I gave the murderer. I made it sort of a duo. You know, they were two killers. I mean, they were. I don't want to give it away, but they had. It made more sense for the killer to have been working with somebody else, and the two of them are the murderers. They both were there at the crime. So that was the only book I can think of offhand where anything really changed about the identity of the killer.
So, and when you're kind of going through, and then so you already know who it's going to be, but has there ever been a time when you're getting halfway through or you're getting near the end, you're like, you know what, maybe I should have made it this person because it maybe it fits a little better. Do those things happen? Do those things change? Or do you throw a suspect out that, you know, you kind of want people to maybe start following and then you kind of like to rip it out from underneath them?
I've never done that. What I have changed is, and because the body count, I'm not saying we're not talking about serial killings in my books, but, you know, I mean, it's up more than one body. The body count can get as high as three or even four. So what I have changed is I fortunately learned early on that you really want to kill somebody horrible. That if I killed somebody readers liked or identified with, that didn't go over well. In the fourth book, there was a lovely woman with a wonderful garden and so forth, and she gets poisoned. And I actually heard from quite a number of people saying, oh, how could you have killed her? She was so lovely, you know. So I thought, oh, okay, so we really can't be killing these nice people, although it's a book called The Body and the Sleigh, and it's a book, I think it's probably my all-time favorite. The victim in that book, I wept while I wrote because she was a teenage girl, and it was very sad. But that's kind of an exception.
So let's kind of recap just a little bit, because since you have kind of 23 books and all of them are kind of standalones, and when you do go to a book signing and people always kind of ask, is there one in particular that maybe you're like, start with this one because it maybe it gives you a better idea, or do you just say, hey, pick up the book, read the back, see what interests you, and then just go from there?
Well, I kind of, you know, I mean, it's like the question of, you know, do you make your bed every morning before you leave for work kind of thing. It's all personality, you know. I try to get a sense of what the person is like, because some people really, really want to read them all in order. And they'll ask me, they'll say, which is the first? And then I know right away this is somebody. But really, I've a lot of times people just plunge in and they'll read one. And, you know, when they read them completely out of order. I also did a series, I did a four-book series for kids, for middle-grade readers, called Christie and Company. And those you totally didn't have to read in order. They were about these girls in a boarding school. I didn't want parents. And then I wrote a YA non-mystery called Club Meds about a ninth-grade boy who was bullied for his meds, and how the kids, you know, kind of all band together to defeat the. That's the only book I've ever written in first person. It was very freeing and to be a ninth grade boy and write in first person. And then I have a series cookbook, and I'm sorry to tell you the title. It's called Have Faith in Your Kitchen. yes. Because after the first four books, people had been writing to me for recipes. I was sending them out. And again, this editor, Ruth Cavan, told me, she said, well, you know, you need to put the recipes in the books. And Virginia Rich had done that, and I thought it would be too much like copying her. But I said, oh, okay. And the recipes are the hardest part of the book to write because they have to be original. I don't want them to have exotic or expensive ingredients. They have to be tasty. But so they come at the end of the book with an author's note, which is a lot of fun for me to write. In this author's note, I write about how I fall in love too easily with places, you know.
Yeah.
Those teen years, definitely all crushes and things, but definitely places. So I write about Savannah, and then there are a bunch of Southern recipes. So, you know, we had all these recipes, and I wrote a couple of little essays, so that became Have Faith in Your Kitchen.
So those kinds of things fit in with the theme and the setting of the books, I guess you want to say.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't want the recipes to interrupt the narrative of the book so that Faith would find a badly bludgeoned body and there'd be, you know, a
blueberry cheesecake.
Deep chocolate, or a brownie recipe. Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
You don't want to have her lay face down in the chocolate mousse and say, but if you want to make the chocolate mousse, this is how you do it.
Yeah. Well, you know, the title, The Body and the Bouillon, one of my books is the Body and the Bouillon, and the whole thing was suggested by an episode of, you can probably find it on cable or, you know, or in one of the Netflix, or we have Apple TV. It was Mary Hartman, and the coach.
I remember that show.
Do you remember that? And the coach drowns in his soup. He falls face down into his soup and he dies.
Yep.
Yeah, which I thought was a pretty cool way to kill somebody.
Well, I'll tell you what, Catherine, we have come to the end. It has been an absolute joy to speak with you.
I know,
it's just flown by. But I
wish
you nothing but the best. Good luck with the book. Have fun on, you know, I think you have a little bit left here on this Partners in Crime tour. So
yes, I do.
Good
it
luck. Have
fun.
A lot of fun. And thank you so much for coming on.
And, John, thank you for inviting me. I had a ball.
All right, good. So enjoy, take it easy,
yep.
And we will see you maybe next time.
Yes, I would love that. Okay.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So, again, everybody, that is author Catherine Hall Page. Remember, it's Catherine-Hall-Page.org for more information on the entire Faith Fairchild series, including the latest book, which came out April 26th. It's called The Body in the Wardrobe. So make sure you go and check that out. You can look at all of her ones, all of the books, if you want to just jump into the series, if you're new to it. You have a lot to choose from. These are whodunits. So if you're into that whodunit stuff, this is a perfect place to go and pick up a book if it's a nice rainy day out today and just go get it. So we want to thank Catherine again for coming on. It's been fabulous. So again, everybody, until next time, we are going to be back in about a half hour, and we're going to have our next guest on, Connie DeMarco. So until then, we will see you all next time.